I am happy to welcome Claire Stanley to the Bay State. Claire is the ACB National Advocacy Outreach Specialist. She's also a lawyer. And I learned the other day, I think it was the Florida convention that was broadcast, that she is also a National Braille Challenge champion, which is very impressive. So Claire is going to talk to us about ACB advocacy priorities in this challenging time of COVID-19. Again, thank you, Claire, for agreeing to be with us today.
Of course. Thank you so much for the invitation to speak with you guys. I've been to Massachusetts once or twice before, but I'd love to come back and explore. So thank you for the virtual invitation to spend time with you guys. So I'm going to break down what's going on with COVID in the advocacy world in three major issue areas that we've been talking about, but then with a couple other little things sprinkled in. So first and foremost is transportation issues. Most of us don't think of transportation right now because most of us are huddled at home, not going out. But I'm sure most of you have heard that transportation has been significantly reduced. And so that's impacted paratransit services because, as most of you know, if public transit is cut, legally paratransit can be cut because they just have to mirror each other. So that's something we've been keeping an eye on. There haven't been too many reports of major issues, but again, it's something I've kept a pulse on just to make sure things don't get too hairy in that respect. A couple other things we've been working on with transportation have to do with the services once things are up and running, even if they're only semi up and running. Many bus transit systems are starting a process where you can only enter via the back door of the bus, and that's to prevent transmission to bus drivers, things like that. All of us have heard really awful stories of bus drivers becoming infected. So because of that, they are having people enter via the back door. But for the blind community, that obviously presents some challenges. I know for me, finding the back door unto itself is a challenge. So we have drafted up through the Consortium of Citizens with Disabilities. I'm the co-chair of the Transportation Task Force. We've drafted up some suggestions for some major transportation unions and providers to talk about what would be appropriate to educate bus drivers on serving blind and visually impaired travelers to make sure that if we have to enter the bus from the back, how they can accommodate us and help us to know how to do so, first of all, telling us if that's the case in our region so that we know what we're dealing with, and then some other issues. Another issue related to that is that many regions are cutting down on the percentage of people who can enter the bus at any given time. So for instance, many are saying they can only have 50% capacity in a bus. And so technically a bus driver can drive past a bus stop, already have 50% capacity in the bus and see you standing at the bus stop and say, oh, you know, sorry, full already, and drive past you, which is very frustrating because if the bus pulls up and pulls away, how do you know, was that my bus? Obviously, we can't read the bus number. So was it, you know, to capacity, or what's the situation going on? So again, that's an issue that we're talking to transit systems about to come up with solutions because, you know, how do you know if the bus driver just passed on by for whatever reason, what's going on? So that's another transportation issue we are working on. So those are some of the big ones that we've been talking about as far as buses go. But we'd love input from anybody if there are other issues you're seeing. We're obviously keeping an eye on major subway metro systems. I know you guys have your system in Massachusetts. We're keeping an eye on the system here in DC that's been significantly limited, and a lot of the same issues going on in those systems. So those are transportation issues. The other issue, then second topic area I wanted to talk about is education. Knock on wood, at this point, we feel like we have some success in the advocacy of education after the DeVos Secretary of Education report came out several weeks ago, maybe getting close to a month ago now. As some background, if you're not familiar with that, Lamar Alexander had proposed in, it was COVID-3, the third stimulus package, that school districts and states might have the ability to waive certain requirements for school districts to provide. And under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, they were going to argue that not all requirements under IDEA were going to have to be provided. They were saying, you know, we don't have the resources, the time, the money, et cetera. And so disability advocates got up on the horn and said, no, you know, call your reps. This isn't okay. So thankfully that wasn't included in COVID-3, but what was included in COVID-3 was a request for the Secretary of Education to create a report to talk about what could or could not be required in the next stimulus package, COVID-4. So she put out her report as required. And shockingly, excuse my surprise, she did not, for the most part, call for any changes to a fair, appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment, so the language under IDEA. Now, that was simply a report. So technically, Congress can take that report and ignore it if they want. But hopefully, the point of the report was to be suggestive. So based on the report, we're pretty optimistic that there shouldn't be any major cuts to IDEA in COVID-4, which is the stimulus package that is being worked on. The House just put out their side and now it's going to the Senate. And so we're waiting to see what will come from that. But as of now, knock on wood, based off of that report, we haven't seen any major cuts to education. The ACB National Office did draft a letter with AFB, the American Foundation for the Blind, signed on by several other blind and deafblind organizations. We sent it out to Congress, encouraging them that the report was appropriate, but also pushing for additional funding for at-home services for blind and deafblind students, talking about how if we're using things like technology to educate these students, we're going to need additional funding. So that's where we are right now. With education, we were initially nervous that with things like using different technology to educate students, there would be accessibility gaps. But surprisingly, we haven't gotten too many stories or reports from students, whether it be K through 12 or higher ed. We haven't gotten many reports, if any, talking about inaccessibility. So if that's something you're hearing about, please, please, please let us know. Because that was our knee-jerk reaction was, oh no, we're going to hear from lots of students, and we simply haven't. So maybe we were too pessimistic and technology is doing what it's supposed to do, but it's something we're keeping a close look on. And then the third area I wanted to talk about, and I saved it for last because I think it's the most significant area of advocacy we're working on right now, is voting. And I'm sure you guys are all nodding your head because voting is a big issue with the primaries going on right now and then the general election coming up in the fall. Not surprisingly, because of COVID, many states are turning to absentee ballot voting, which makes sense going to polling places. If you're standing in the normal lines that we're all used to with voting, you're literally, you know, no space between you and another person waiting in line for potentially hours. The transmission of COVID could be very rampant. So as a result, states are talking about absentee ballot. However, as we all know, absentee voting is not accessible. It is a paper ballot. I actually just got my paper ballot in the mail this past week and I opened it up. It's just a plain old-fashioned paper ballot that I can't read because I'm blind. So we're talking about how to accommodate blind and visually impaired voters. Many states have taken different approaches. We have been assisting, we meaning the national office, have assisted in a few different ways. In the state of Idaho, the other IC, in the state of Idaho, the Disability Rights Idaho, which is the Protection and Advocacy Office, filed a complaint with the Department of Justice Disability Rights Section, and we submitted a supplemental complaint with a couple of ACB members from Idaho as well. We similarly did that with a couple of ACB members from New York, also filing a complaint with DOJ. So that's one venue people can use. And we've heard other states talking about doing that. So going through the federal agency of DOJ. But then many states are popping up with actual lawsuits right now, cutting the middleman and going right to the federal courts. We were approached to the national office by Disability Rights New York, the protection and advocacy organization there. And just as of yesterday, Friday, I think today is Saturday, they all blur together. They officially filed the lawsuit. So that's now going on in the Southern District of New York. So there's actual federal litigation going on. NFB brought a suit in Michigan that was successful. They have alluded to the fact through meetings we've been a part of that they're probably going to pop up in a couple other states. Several organizations are working or trying emphasis on the word trying to work with the Secretary of States and their states to come up with solutions. So there's all kinds of litigation and advocacy going on with absentee voting. We have seen some success with states agreeing to use Democracy Live with their ballot called Omni Ballot, which is the accessible voting system that you can both vote and submit your ballot electronically. So we were pretty excited. For instance, we saw that in places like New Jersey and Delaware. But unfortunately, in response to those, we're seeing a lot of the security advocates pop up arguing that those processes are not secure. And so in places like New Jersey, where we thought we had a win and we were all excited, then we quickly saw these security advocates pop up and bring suits to say, no, things like Omni Ballot are not fully secure. And so in a way, they're fighting against us. So we think we see, one step forward, and then we feel like we fall two steps back because of these security advocates. So it's something we're working with some public relations organizations to put out some pieces of really op-eds to say, this isn't okay. We need to emphasize that you guys are arguing security, but you have no solutions. And in the meantime, you're preventing people who are blind and visually impaired to vote privately and independently. So we're fighting it on many fronts, but as you guys know, it's a tough battle. We have been trying to keep track, and we think we've seen about half the states, so close to 25 states, have been arguing and fighting and bringing legislation or litigation in this area. So it's a pretty hot button topic. I know you guys are doing some great work in Massachusetts. So I'd say during COVID, voting, just because of the timing, is one of the most heavily advocated issues we're dealing with. So transportation, education, and voting, I would say, are the three most hot button topics. But again, I would love to hear anything we might be missing, either in those areas or other areas completely, that the national office should be keeping our eye on.
Claire, are you ready for questions?
I am definitely ready for questions.
Okay, Rick, who you got lined up?
Sharon?
Good afternoon, Claire. Thank you so much for being with us. I actually have two things in the medical arena.
Okay.
One of them is that I had a very successful telehealth call the other day on Zoom, and that was fine. But my provider told me that for the moment they were using Zoom, and they weren't sure whether they were going to stay with that application. And I have a fear that we might get into some medical application that will not be accessible. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. The other thing that I've been looking at is if someone needed to be tested and was symptomatic, how would they get there? Because at the moment they're saying, drive through, and I don't think I would want a friend or an Uber or whatever to take me. So I contacted my health plan, and they said, oh, if your doctor approved it, we'd send an ambulance for you to be tested, which I thought would be really overkill.
But, yeah.
but I didn't have any other solution, and I'm feeling just fine. But I think it's a real concern. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for bringing those up. Those are two issues that have come to our attention. So thanks for bringing those up so I can touch upon them. For telehealth services, I'm glad to hear that they were using Zoom, since we all know that's pretty accessible. If you guys have examples on names of telehealth services that aren't working, if you could let us know, that would be extremely helpful, because we're trying to keep a running list, so to speak, so we know who to reach out to. Under the third COVID package, it was included that they have to allow people to speak over the phone if the program isn't accessible, which of course is not fully appropriate, because what if the doctor has to look at your glands or, you know, look in your throat? So obviously we want things to be fully accessible, but that was a slight win that, you know, if nothing else, the doctor does have to talk to you over the phone. But yes, if you guys have specific programs, let us know so we can start outreach. And then as far as getting to a testing site, so that's something that we're also working on. I just had somebody call us from the Los Angeles area with the same concern, because they were told, actually, for people who weren't showing symptoms, they're now doing the asymptomatic testing, which is great. But the same thing came up, you know, you're supposed to go and drive there. So it's something we're working on. We're encouraging people to reach out to their states, because it's a state-specific service. Every state does it a little bit differently. But again, something I'd love for people to let us know about so we can keep track of it. And I was told the same thing. I had somebody here in the DC area, and they called their local public health provider, and they were told the same thing. Well, if you think you have symptoms and you're blind and you can't drive, call public health and we'll send someone out, which I agree does seem a bit overkill. But that is the one solution I have heard as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Linda.
Hi. I have some questions about voting. In Sudbury, they have a local election on June 23rd, and I'd like to be able to vote absentee ballot, because if there's COVID still going on, I might have an eye appointment. So I'd like to do the absentee ballot thing. And one interesting thing that I wanted to make you aware of was I found something through the church that I go to about rank voting, you know, where you can pick the order of the alternatives that you want to vote for, yada, mm-hmm. yada. Mm-hmm. So I went on the website and, I found out, first of all, you have to draw your signature. So I couldn't do it. Then I tried to get help, and I called Microsoft customers with disabilities. And then I find out that this rank thing is a free trial for something you have to pay for. And I'm thinking, what? You shouldn't have to pay to vote. Hello. So, and the other thing is, as far as the primary, et cetera, I don't have transportation to go vote. So again, I would have to do the absentee ballot thing. And I'm trying to hook up with Carmine Gentile, who said that somehow they could give me help with the absentee ballot over the phone. I don't know how they're going to do it, but I have yet to take care of that, because I had a tragedy happen lately and I haven't gotten around to it yet.
Gotcha. So, can you expand? I'm not sure I understand the rank. Is it an app, or is it something they require you guys to use in your jurisdiction? Or
What are you asking me? I don't understand.
You said you have to pay for rank. What is rank?
It's a website.
Oh, okay.
I got that from First Parish of Wayland. And okay, so that's what that is. And I wrote them back and said, you know, this is weird. I worked hard trying to access this, and then I find out it's a free trial that you got to pay for. Well, I don't want to pay to vote, so that's it. I'm done.
Yeah, no, you definitely should not have to pay to vote. Is your jurisdiction providing any absentee ballots, even though they're not fully accessible, so that you have a way to vote without having to go there? Or,
well, yeah, I can apply for that, and I have the application that I put in a Word file, so I can do that, but I don't have the help because there's nobody here.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha.
This is Steve Dresser with a comment.
Please.
That rank voting thing is a petition, and the problem is not that you have to pay for it. There's nothing to do with paying for it at all. It's a petition that they're trying to get rank voting to be considered by the legislature. And I ran into the same problem when I went to the website. You get through filling out the information, and then you have to draw your signature, which, of course, we can't do. Mm-hmm. So the real problem is the accessibility of a petition that I would love to sign, but can't.
Interesting. Yeah, thank you for bringing that to our attention. And maybe I can contact you guys afterwards to learn more about this and see how we might be able to help, because I've never heard of such a program before. So that's really fascinating. So maybe we can touch base after the fact and look more into this.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
I think we have time for one more question. We're a little behind, but that's okay. Maybe one more question.
Yeah, 00308, please.
That would be me. It's Chris. One thing that came up last night, and Debbie, my wife's guide dog, had an emergency. She had trouble with her legs. She's almost 13, and she had trouble with her back legs. They were arthritic, and Kathy, the vet, wasn't there, so Kathy had to take her to Angel Memorial in Boston. And what happened was she was not allowed to come in. If her sister hadn't come, she would have been had to. They did. I did call and say she needs to be inside, because basically they expect you to drive up, as we all can, and get your vet visit and stay in the car. They will come and get the dog. They'll come and bring the dog back. Well, we don't have cars to stay in if you go in a cab or a ride vehicle or whatever you do. So what I did was I was able to say she at least has to come inside. So what she had to do was go into this little lobby area. Her sister then came and met her there. Had to go into this lobby area and wait. And even though there was like a bathroom there her sister wanted to use, she could see it, but she wasn't allowed to go in there because of the restrictions and so forth. Mm-hmm. So has there been anything brought up about vet visits, especially for guide dogs, because blind people cannot, it's similar to the voting thing that Sharon was, testing thing that Sharon was bringing up. If you don't have a car to go in, you don't have anywhere to wait. They have to do something. And that was a special accommodation. They even did that. But has that been an issue that people have brought up?
Yes, it is an issue that's been brought up. And thank you. I will bring that up again in the office. That one, I must admit, is a little bit more difficult because unlike voting that's, you know, run by a county and is more widespread, vet by vet by vet office, they're individual vet offices. So you have to start doing so, unless it's like a county provided service, which some are obviously, but if they're private vet offices, then you get into the frustration of, I have to advocate to every single last vet office. So if anybody has any suggestions, let us know, but I'll bring it back to the team and perhaps we can toss around ideas. But unfortunately it does go down to a lot of individual advocacy. But I'll definitely take it back and we can brainstorm ideas.
Good.
Okay. So again, Claire, thank you so much for agreeing to spend some time with us during this holiday weekend. And I hope maybe sometime you can actually come here to Massachusetts, like in a real world type setting, and we can show you around. So thank you very much.
Of course. Hey.